Thank you, Mr. Stiff. I sure enjoyed those hymns. They were so many beautiful words there. Well, as our opening prayer mentioned, and in chronological context, after the Passover, the Israelites left Egypt and within a short period of time found themselves at the Red Sea. Today, we're a few days after the Passover, and it's a great time to ponder the lessons the Israelites faced when they came to the Red Sea. So on this split sermon, we will explore the similarities between what the Israelites faced at the Red Sea and what we will face on our future exodus to the place of safety. We'll be looking mainly at Exodus 14 and Revelation 12 to highlight these similarities. And I've identified seven of them. And first, I'd like to just give you a summary of the Red Sea situation and a summary of our flight to the place of safety. And then we'll go into those 7 points in more detailed analysis. So the summary of the Exodus to the Red Sea: God's people left Egypt in persecution with miraculous protection, where they were directed into a place where they had no escape. An angel of the Lord protected them, armies pursued them, the people were anxious and complained against Moses. The sea swallowed up the armies pursuing the Israelites. The Israelites stayed in the wilderness and were nourished. And then they entered the promised land. And our story in the future for the place of safety: God's people are persecuted. They are led with miraculous protection to a place of safety. They were directed to a place of vulnerability where an angel of the Lord protected them, armies pursued them, or should I say us, if that's us in this age. There was no record of the people being anxious and complaining against their leader, but the earth swallowed up those armies pursuing them. And they stayed in the wilderness and was nourished there. And then they entered the promised land. So there's a lot of similarities, and we'll go through 7 of them that I've identified. If you like, you could split your page in two, and on one side have the Exodus, and on the right side, the place of safety. So point number one is they were persecuted. Let's go to Exodus 5. So the Israelites had been in Egypt for over 400 years and were much a slave to the Egyptians. And in Exodus 5 and verse 4, we see that the pressure got turned up on the Israelites when Moses asked that they be allowed to leave to go into the wilderness. Verse 4, and the king of Egypt said to them, "Wherefore do you, Moses and Aaron, let the people from their work? Get you to your burdens." And Pharaoh said, "Behold, the people of the land now are many, and you make them rest from their burdens." And Pharaoh commanded the same day the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, "We shall have no more give people straw to make brick as we have, let them go and gather for themselves." So we see that the burdens were increased in Egypt. Let's go to us in the place of safety, or before the place of safety, John 15. John 15. John 15 and verse 20. Remember the word that I said to you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. Right, so that's part of our lot, being persecuted. Let's go to Revelation 12, where we see that exodus into the place of safety. Revelation 12 and verse 13. And when the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. The woman here speaking of the church, and that's us, brethren. Satan goes to persecute the church. Second point is the Israelites left Egypt and went to the wilderness. And for us, going to the place of safety, we leave the world to go into the wilderness. In Revelation 3. Let's go to Revelation 3 and verse 10. This is talking about the Philadelphia era. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation which shall come upon the whole world. So this is the tribulation that we're going to be kept safe from. This is a time of great distress. Point number three, an angel protected them. Let's go to Exodus 14, where we see the Exodus through the Red Sea. Exodus 14, verses 19. And the angel of the Lord, which went before them, before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. So the Israelites had an angel protecting them. And let's go to Exodus 19 and verse 4. It says, you have seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. So the Israelites were protected by an angel and bore them on eagle's wings, or figuratively of protection. And when we go to Revelation 12 and verse 14, it says, unto the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. So here we're given protection, and we're also given divine transport to the place of safety, similar to the Israelites were given that divine protection. Let's just go to Daniel 12 and look at the angel that protects us. So we see in Daniel 11, the very last verse there is talking about the beast power. He shall plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end and none shall help him. Daniel 12 and verse 1, and at that time shall Michael stand up, that great prince which stands for the children of the people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even unto that same time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone that shall be found written in the book. That's us, brethren. We have that divine protection of the archangel Michael. Point number four, Israel was pursued by an army. In Exodus 14 and verse 8, we see, and the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with a high hand. And in verse 10, and when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. So the Israelites were pursued by an army to this place they couldn't get away from. Let's have a look at the place of safety equivalent here in Revelation 12. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. So water is signifying armies. If we go to Revelation 17, just over a couple of chapters, and verse 15, it says, "And he said to me, 'The waters which you saw where the whore sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues.'" So as we go into the place of safety, Satan's going to pour out armies after us. There's a number of other passages that talk about the water as armies, and I'll give those as references. I won't turn to them. Psalm 32, verses 6 to 11. Isaiah 8, verses 5 to 8. Jeremiah 46, verses 7 to 8. Jeremiah 47, verses 2 to 3. Now, these prophecies about armies flowing like a river or a flood, talking about the king of the north coming through the promised land from the north. And if you could imagine armies coming from the north, where are people going to flee? It's to the south. And to the south is desert, and to the east is Petra. If that's the place of safety, there's going to be a lot of people trying to get into those mountains. It makes a lot of sense why those armies pursuing God's people would be such a threat. Point number five, the people complained against their leader. Let's go to Exodus 14. Exodus 14, verses 11 and 12. "And they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Therefore have you dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt.'" Verse 12, "Is this the word that we did tell you in Egypt, saying, 'Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." It was a hopeless time. They're feeling disempowered and overpowered, trapped against the Red Sea, mountains on either side, and the Egyptian army behind them. It was, the senses would have been overwhelming with that noise and the sight and nowhere to go. And brethren, we have those situations in our life now. We have stressful times, things that happen to us where we feel overwhelmed, trapped, disempowered. And in sometimes we have someone that's led us there. Whether it's at work, our boss has told us to do something, or, you know, in our families, you know. How often do we feel disempowered in relationships? And sometimes it's tempting to blame whoever's in charge. And in the church, we have similar situations where at times our leadership makes strange decisions. If you've lived through the mid-90s with the Worldwide Church of God, you will understand what I'm saying here, where our leaders did away with the holy days and the Sabbath and said you can keep Christmas and Easter. And it was a really tough time. Let's look at Moses' response here in Exodus 14 and verse 13 and 14. And Moses said to the people, "Fear you not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he shall show you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them no more forever." Verse 14, "And the Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." So there is encouragement in times of distress. And here Moses gives this most amazing faith-filled statement to calm the people down. What a great thing for them to hear. Let's go to Psalm 106. Psalm 106 and in verse 7, here's King David in a psalm relating to this experience. "Our fathers understood not your wonders in Egypt. They remembered not the multitude of your mercies, but provoked him at the sea, even at the Red Sea." And this is what King David's referring to when the people complained against Moses. And when they complained against Moses, they were complaining against God. And this was one of the 10 times that Israel provoked God. Let's go to Psalm 78. Psalm 78 and verse 40 and 41. "How often did they provoke him in the wilderness and grieve him in the desert? Yes, they turned back and tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel." And brethren, we too can limit God with our complaining. It can limit the blessings that flow our way. Now let's look at us in this age, brethren. In Revelation, it says those people fleeing to the place of safety, they have armies come after them, and there's no record of any complaining. There's no record of any unbelief or any problems. What follows next is deliverance. But here, right now, we can get into that attitude of offending and being offended. Let's look at Luke 17. Luke 17. Luke 17 and verse 1. "Then he said to the disciples, 'It's impossible but that offences will come.'" And in other translations, it makes it a little clearer. I like the Christian Standard Bible for this verse. It said, "Offences will certainly come." And if you've lived in the church for 30 or 40 years, you've probably experienced offences. Either you've been offended or you've offended someone. Offences will certainly come. And it's how we deal with that. That's so important that we show our love and deal with that. Let's go to John 6. Let's break into verse 59. "These things he said to them in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Many, therefore, of his disciples, when they heard this, said, 'This is a hard saying. Who can hear it?'" So this is where Christ said, "Drink my blood. only if you drink my blood and eat my body will you enter eternal life. Many of the disciples, when they heard this, said, this is a hard saying, who can hear it? When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said to them, does this offend you? So many were put off by what Christ had said and left. And here the disciples may have even had those feelings. Let's go to John 7 and verse 19. Did not Moses give you the law, and yet none of you keep the law? Why do you go about to kill me? And verse 22, Moses therefore gave... Moses therefore gave unto you circumcision, not because it is of Moses, but of the fathers, and you on the Sabbath day circumcise a man. If a man on the Sabbath day receives circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are you angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath? So here, what Christ had to say to the Pharisees was offensive to them. And sometimes we as people can offend each other, and I say I'm guilty. No, I have said things that have hurt people, and I apologize for that. I certainly don't set out to hurt people, but sometimes there's ways that I say things that might hurt you. I'm sorry for that. I ask that you forgive me. And if you are offended, that if there's anything that I've said, please come and talk to me. I'm very happy to learn and reassure you. Let's go to Hebrews 13. And this is in the context of our pastor, like the leaders that lead us. Hebrews 13 and verse 17. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch out for your souls as they must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable of you. So here we are exhorted to support our pastor in what he's doing and speaking to us. And like the Israelites went to blaming their leader, we too can go in that direction. And our pastor gets to see the worst of us. When we bring our problems to him, he gets to see all the bad things. So that's why we should give our pastor some respect and listen to him. He gets to see what we need to change. And I am so thankful for Mr. Shaw personally coming to me and saying, you need to change this and that about what you're speaking. I really appreciate that. And we need to have that spirit of submission or willingness to learn. Right, let's go to point number 6. So the armies came and confronted those children of Israel, backed them into the corner of that geographic area where they could not escape. Moses calmed them and reassured them that they would not see this army again. And Moses stretched out his arms, the seas opened, the water divided, in verse 21 of Exodus 14. The children of Israel went through the midst of the sea on dry ground. And in verse 23, the Egyptians pursued and went after them. And verse 27, and Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its strength and swallowed up the Egyptians. Destroyed them all. God gave them protection. Let's go to Hebrews 11 and verse 29. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians went there and drowned. Or as some translations say, the water swallowed them up. The sea swallowed them up. In the Good News translation, it says it was faith that made the Israelites able to cross the Red Sea as if on dry land. When the Egyptians tried to do it, the water swallowed them up. And if we go to Revelation 12, to the place of safety verses, Revelation 12 and verse 16, and the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had cast out of his mouth. So here we are, the armies that come out against us when we're trapped and unable to get away in time, and we need that protection, the earth opens up and swallows up those armies. And then in verse 17, the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God, those that didn't flee to that place of safety. So point number seven, the Israelites entered the promised land from the wilderness. And the way I've written it here, their children entered the promised land. Because of the complaining of the Israelites, God said, you will not enter the promised land, but only your children. But that's where they went when they were nourished in the wilderness. For 40 years, they went into the promised land. And that's what happens to God's people too. After our nourishing in the wilderness, we go into the promised land. So we're protected from the tribulation for 3.5 years. Christ returns. We're joined with Christ for the wedding supper. And then we enter the promised land as his saints. Revelation 14 and verse 1, and I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion with him, 144,000, having their father's name written on their foreheads. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians 4. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. And that's in the context of coming to Jerusalem. And 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 12 and 13, and the Lord make you to increase. I love these verses here because this is tying everything in together that I've spoken about. It's about this loving church that nurtures and holds together and is long-suffering with each other, is they communicate together and work things out. Verse 12, and the Lord make you to increase and abound in love one for another and toward all men, even as we do towards you. And verse 13, to the end he may establish your hearts unblameable in holiness before God, even our Father, at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ with all his saints. When Christ comes to Jerusalem, we are going to be with him. It's going to be an amazing time. Brethren, world events are moving at a dramatic pace. Now, more than ever, we need to be focused on the kingdom. Being less attached to this world, we need to be loving one another and resilient to offence, being able to work through offence, and we need to be ready to go to that place of safety.